Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs, and we're getting close to the end of March. Today's the 30th of March, 2022, and welcome to Education Talk Radio Pre-K-12 Edition. Today, we're going to go over near Cincinnati to Princeton City School District, Ohio. Talk to Chris Lockhart, who's the Director of Technology for Princeton City Schools. It's right by Cincinnati. All right, we're going to talk about how they use the emergency connectivity funds, all right, the government offered, how that affected digital equity in his schools and all the things he did to make equity real in terms of the technology where he's the CTO, okay, for the kids of Princeton City School District. I got to thank my good friends over at Funds for Learning, fundsforlearning.com, for helping me put this show together. If you want all the money you deserve out of your E-rates, out of this ECF, et cetera, please check out fundsforlearning.com. That's enough of a commercial, but John and Julie are good friends of ours, and what they do is just amazing to help schools. We're going to archive this show at ace-ed.org, which, by the way, today on March 30th is down. We're having a bit of a website problem. It should be up by the time you're listening to this. ace-ed.org. From there, you can connect to our teacher retention site, teacher retention and recruiting. Okay, that's teacher-retention.com. Okay, but there is a link on the menu over at ace-ed to go over there. You can also connect to seltoday.org. All of our podcasts are at ace-ed.org, and that's where this one today will be archived as well. So go check out ace-ed.org, and if it's not working today, March 30th, bear with us. We're working on the problem. I did pay the bill, so I don't know what's going on with the hosting company. And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Lockhart. Hi, Chris. It's Larry.
Hello, Larry. Good to talk to you. Thank you for having me on.
It is a pleasure to have you here, sir. Tell us about them. Where are you? In Princeton City? Are you in Cincinnati? Where are you today?
Yeah, so Princeton City Schools, let me tell you about it. There's no place in Ohio called Princeton. So Princeton City Schools is actually a combined school district. We're just north of Cincinnati. So we're made up of five different municipalities, and we cover three different counties. So it's an interesting mix.
It's cool. It's cool. Why did they call it Princeton City?
If you get to name your school district anything, I guess they were aiming high. It was back in 1959, so they named it Princeton.
That's actually interesting because you're close to Cincinnati. Princeton's team name in the college is the Tigers. And then you have the Cincinnati Bengals, who look like Tigers, and they are Tigers.
Well, Princeton City School District, our mascot is the Vikings. So we went all the way to Minnesota for that. So, you know, we're just all over the place.
You really are all over the place. But I love Cincinnati and Houston and Montgomery. And how close are you to that, the greatest ribs in the world there?
Oh, we're just right up the street from Montgomery.
Very
close.
That puts it all into perspective, doesn't it? The great ribs, by the way, everybody. Montgomery Inn.
Yeah.
Right near Princeton. And while there, visit Princeton City Schools. Okay, how interesting. It's really, really pretty cool. Chris, you're the director of technology. And I want you to describe the school district to everybody. What was the demographics of the district?
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked, because that's one of the things that I think makes it so unique. When I started here about 7 years ago, we were the number one most diverse district in the state of Ohio. According to niche.com, we've been now bumped down to number two. Reynoldsburg, Ohio, has replaced us. But because we're a combined school district, we're made up of areas where we have, you know, a lot of low-income residencies all the way up to million-dollar homes. So we really have a very diverse school district social and economical. So we're about 62%, 67% free and reduced. And our demographic makeup is about one-third African-American, one-third Hispanic, and about one-third Caucasian. So, I mean, we're
wow.
That's just
like perfect.
Ultimate melting pot. Yeah, holy. Yeah. And even within all of that, we have students from, I think it was 71 different countries from around the world represented. So it's
you know, that's
really
great. It's so rare when people talk about the diversity of a school district to have it break down a third, and a third, basically. Okay, that's really pretty
yes.
cool. That's great, man. Right?
Yeah, so I think, you know, beyond you know, even the conversation that we're going to have today about technology, I just think that's such a strong exposure at such a young age to have that level of exposure to that diversity, to really get that deep dive into what it's like to work in a diverse environment, what it's like to
absolutely.
Learn, study, and grow, and get that understanding of and appreciation of diversity.
Well, it's a diverse world. All right, and we want kids to go out into the world, and we want them to feel comfortable with whoever they are and whoever they're working with, okay? And that's why it's so important for a lot of diversity in schools. I think it's great. I think it's just great. How many kids go to the school district?
We have about 6,000 kids. I think right now we're at 5,982.
I'll call it 6,000. We're good for
6,000 students. Yes.
Right.
This
is great. And by the way, I forgot to mention this. I do want to mention one thing. Thank you for calling in today. It's your spring break. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Well, for technology department, spring break is our chance to get in to fix all the stuff that we can't fix with the kids
okay.
and staff.
Okay, spring
here,
break
so.
For the school district. How's that? Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Double time for us. To use my old military terms. Double time for us while they're gone.
There you go. You were saying how many elementaries, how many junior highs, et cetera, middle schools, et cetera.
Yeah. We have 8 elementary schools, 1 middle school, 1 high school, and then we have our newest innovation center, which is a combination between middle school and high school. So it's an alternative program that we have for either credit recovery or even credit acceleration.
Oh, nice. Nice. That's terrific.
So
is that have its own building or is it incorporated within?
It is attached to our administrative building, so it's in the building that I work out of. And again, we allow the students to either recover credits, or we've had 20 students this year so far that have graduated in their senior year, and they're just completely done with school already at this point.
Isn't that nice? Congratulations! That's just wonderful. Terrific.
Thank you.
Okay, talk to me, and this is key, and I work with John and Julie and Funds for Learning. Again, everybody, I know it sounds like a commercial, but I don't care. Okay, FundsForLearning.com has proven itself so many times. John Harrington, the boss, is constantly going to watch the talk in front of the FCC. He's an expert in what they do for schools and libraries in terms of getting the right amount of dollars for them is amazing. So I don't care how much it sounds like a commercial. That's the way I feel about them. Okay? And I assume you're working with them since they set this all up. Okay, thank you, Julie. And, you know, talk about how you're working with a company like Funds for Learning and how the Emergency Connectivity Fund operates.
Sure,
Chris Lockhart,
sure.
Everybody. Go for it, Chris.
Yeah, so I'll echo what you said. I think the nice thing about Funds for Learning is that they're not only a partner, but they're also an advocate. And they've been advocating for a long time. And so the latest round, COVID-related, was the federal government came up with the Emergency Connectivity Fund. So they set aside about $7.1 billion, with a B, to help fund schools for connectivity. And started last year, so they had an initial round where we were able to apply for funds for your school districts to make sure that all of your students had connectivity beyond the school campus. So
and how'd you, Princeton, I want to ask this as you get into this. when you looked at it, okay, when the pandemic hit and all this jazz, you know, you were probably rolling along pretty good in school. You're a good technology officer, et cetera, and technology is education these days, okay, in terms of the tools we use. All right, the pandemic hits, and I have to ask you, Chris, just when the pandemic hit, every kid got sent home all of a sudden, yet we depend on so much in schools technology. You must have had a surprise. Oh, my God, half these kids aren't even connected. But I just want to ask, well, give me that positioning and then how you use the funding.
Absolutely. So first, we panicked. No. But it was a very disruptive thing to happen because for K-12 education, traditional, what we call butts and seats, we had a very traditional mindset. Bring the kids in, put them in front of a teacher, and we provided them that technology, but the technology was just a way for the instruction to take place in the classroom. So now all of a sudden you say, go home.
That's right.
Well, a little bit about Princeton. At that time, we had enough Chromebooks for all the students to have access to a Chromebook, but we kept them all at school. And so they would come into a class, and in their classroom they would have Chromebooks that they could use and then put back at the end of the day. And so that was our model then. A little bit later I'll tell you about some of the things we did in the community, but just to talk about what happened with the pandemic, we had to make a huge shift. So now we have to educate them from home. So, again, I've got great leadership here in the district. Tom Burton is our superintendent.
Yep.
Mary Phillips, our associate superintendent. They've been in this industry forever. They're great at what they do. So we made the decision we are going to hand out the Chromebooks to the students to take home. So we planned a couple of different events at the high school, at some of the schools, and said we're going to get these devices out to the kids, get them in their hands so they can continue learning at home. And it was a audacious goal, and it was very time-consuming, and we were able to get it done with a lot of other volunteers here in the school district. Teachers stepped up, staff stepped up. So once we got that done, we realized that, okay, we've only done a fraction of what we needed to do. While the students now had devices at home, some of those students did not have any type of broadband connectivity at home.
Exactly.
Yeah, and wow. So, you know, and I use that term broadband because that's part of what the emergency fund was connected to, was because, you know, you had students that had cell phones. And you could arguably say that you can get online with your cell phone, but it's not a broadband connection, you know,
Right. Specifically
not at that time before 5G was a big thing.
Right.
Or you had, in that situation, you had limited connectivity at home, and it was fine when the kids or their parents were just streaming the video here or there. But now if you've got a household of two adults, three children who are all home during the day,
right,
then that access becomes a challenge. So we immediately expanded our current. We had a limited number of MiFis, the little mobile hotspots that we had. So we immediately had to expand that. But again, we talk about equity and access. At that time, we were able to procure about 180 of those devices. And the question was, how do you make it equitable? You know, if we just give it to 180 students, but we have
remember there's 6,000 in 6,000 in the school.
Right.
God knows how many need this. Go ahead, in the school district.
Right.
So
again, having a great team around me, we decided that we were going to work with our largest rental properties and multi-home dwellings and develop a library system. Well, we went and talked to the property managers and said, can we leave these devices here with you? And would you be willing to sign them out and receive them back from our students while they need them? So that was the first thing we did, not knowing where any of this additional funding was going to come from.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So we made that commitment, not knowing where the funding was going to come from.
And they assumed the responsibility. These people assumed the responsibility of signing them in and out.
Yes, yes.
Wow, that's saying something.
We try to cultivate a great relationship with all of the community. And again, I could go
obviously you have
one of a bunch of different I could go off on a bunch of different tangents. But one of the things we have is a business partner program where we're constantly working with businesses and entities in our school district, not asking them for anything, but trying to offer them students, you know, try to get some internships for them or just employment, especially in this market now where employers are looking for employees. You know, we have a wealth of knowledge and skills here in the school district and our students, and they get a chance to audition them potentially for lifelong jobs.
That's right.
Yeah, so because of that, we've always had good ties with the community, so all of them were on board. You know, it's it. Yes, we'll absolutely do it.
So that was the
big push there, getting our teachers comfortable with that. And then there were ESSER funds that were introduced that helped supplement that, which is a whole other federal program. But then when this $7.1 billion fund became available, you know, we really decided we were going to take full advantage of this to make sure that our students got that connectivity, the devices that they needed. And that was where that came in. And working with, again, the Funds for Learning, they were a great resource on what we could purchase, what's eligible, what they thought the guidance was going to be going forward because of their connection with the federal government to say, you know, we believe that there may be some other things coming. So because of that, we just doubled down. So we picked up 400 of the additional MiFi devices to make sure that we could reach more of the students. We also have Chromebooks that are expiring. A quick aside for those that are listening. The Chromebooks have a limited lifespan. They have a end date where they'll stop updating, which makes it difficult for us to support them in schools. And this year, we actually have about 2,000 of those devices that are expiring. So the ECF fund came along, the Emergency Connectivity Fund. Sorry, I get stuck speaking in acronyms in schools.
Yeah, we all do. Don't worry about it.
Provided where we could purchase replacements for the ones that were expiring for the students that had that need. So we were able to purchase our replacement cycle of Chromebooks through the fund. We were able to fully fund the mobile Wi-Fis that we had. And with another fund that came along during the whole pandemic, we were able to equip 60 of our 62 school buses with internet access also.
Wow.
So the students now, when they're riding to and from school, have access to the internet even while they're on the bus. And for
do the
most
kids,
of our students,
I have to ask you,
fairly...
I want to stop you there. Kids on school buses, this is nothing derogatory about your kids, they can get a little rowdy. Okay, we know that. Okay, we hope they sit in their seats and stay safe. But to me, putting the Wi-Fi in school buses allows the school buses to park in the community and give them a hotspot. But are the kids using the technology on the bus? What do you hear from the bus drivers or whoever? I think it's great if they're doing it.
Yeah, it's a mixed batch. What we have is for most of our kids,
kids are kids. Yeah.
Well, they're going to their neighborhood school. So for most of our elementary schools, they're going to their neighborhood school. They're on the bus maybe for, you know, 20, 30 minutes, you know, and that includes getting on, sitting down, picking up other kids and getting to their destination. But we do have some students that may be on the buses for up to an hour, depending on what the route looks like.
Because
we have our combined middle school and high school. So they may be stuck kind of going around. So it gives that, again, trying to get back to the equity piece where we want to make sure that everybody has access. And so
there
may not be a huge benefit for everybody, for those students that don't have that access for some reason or need that additional time, it's there. So whether it's on their Chrome device or lots of kids nowadays have these mobile devices. So even on their mobile device, it allows them to stay connected. And there's the full filtering on that connection also. So even on that connection, we don't have to worry about them going out into places that may be harmful to them. Yes.
You know, I want to ask you something. I've never filled out the form. When you say you were able to get the money from the ECF funds, okay, obviously user E-rates as well. I picture the form, and I've never seen it, okay, but I picture the form looking like my income tax return. Okay, a mishmash. Okay, and yes. Hopefully you fill it out better than I fill out my income tax return. But my question is, you're a technology guy, all right?
Yes.
And I would bet you don't like forms that much and filling out forms. Okay, nobody does that. All right.
Correct.
So we easily say, oh, I was able to use the ECF funds, but you have to know about the ECF funds. And then, B, you have to be able to fill it out properly. God knows there's some jerk in the government who's, just because you didn't dot an I, he's going to send it back to you. All right? And I'm curious, yes. and I'm going to make this point. I always say that people who don't use a company like Funds for Learning, again, I sound like a commercial, but I don't care, okay? People who don't use that, it's like filling out your own income tax return, and I'll see you all in federal prison, okay, because you're not going to get it right. All right. It's the same thing with this. So when you need all these things, okay, how, and I want to make this point, how does the company, I know you work closely with them, like Funds for Learning, put it all together for you? Well, what's your role in that and their role in that?
Very good. Yeah, when you first started, I was thinking, uh-oh. I said, this is going to sound like a segue in the biz. I don't fill those forms out. You know, I would say if you had
– horrible to even think
about.
Yeah,
right, because we asked for – between the two rounds, we asked for about $830,000 worth of equipment and services. Yep. And so you assume if you have a tax return that you're trying to fill out for about $800,000 worth of income, you probably want to hire a professional tax preparer.
Right.
And so that's been my attitude also, is that I don't want to learn this. I have enough on my plate already.
Love that.
So,
yeah.
So Funds for Learning, we actually do video calls on the computer and have conversations about, okay, here's what I'm thinking about. Is this allowable? And we just sit down like you would with your preparer, you know, preparing for the next tax season and saying, you know, what should I be doing to prepare for this? And so we have those conversations. I say, look, these are the needs that I have. Are these covered? Oh, yes, they are. Oh, no, that's not allowed. Okay, yes, that's allowed, but you have to justify it. So we have those conversations. So by the time we go to the preparing of the form, they already know what I'm looking for, and I already know what to expect once that's filed. So it's going to sound like a small commercial, but
I don't
envy anyone that sits there and tries to do it on their own. Hire the professionals and let them do it.
Thank you. And you know, and I have to say something else. Even if you were good at filling out forms, okay, everybody hates that, but even if you were good at filling out forms, all right, who the hell has the time to fill out the form? That's something you can give that to the pros. Okay?
Yes.
That's simple.
Really.
That's why I love
and
talking
the other
to
thing,
you. Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing, it is a federal program. So they have sent back questions about the application. You know, what is this for? Justify this. And so, again, having that professional that has experienced this before, they know how to answer those questions in a succinct manner that gets us the results that we need.
Exactly.
So, again, it's like going to court. You know, it's like going to court. The attorneys know not only the rules, but they know the traditions also.
Yeah.
So it's not a matter of you answering or not answering the question. It's about how the court wants you to answer the question. And it's the same thing with the the federal funding, is that they're looking for specific answers to the question. And if you go off on a tangent, then you may open yourself up to additional questions that had nothing to do with the original question, just trying to justify why you want why you want this for kids. Right.
Yeah. Right. I couldn't agree with you more, and it's so obvious that I constantly am advocating for this. Do not do this by yourself, school district. Get a pro. All right? Like Chris. Be smart. Okay? Like Chris. I want to talk to you. Yeah, how much money have you gotten from ECF so far? Is that a fair question? Can I ask that?
Yes, public knowledge, so anyone can actually on to the website and see what we apply for. Now, here's what's interesting. We've actually received the funding from our second round. So just a brief background for those listening. There's actually been three rounds. I talked about the $7.1 billion, and then there was some left over. So we applied for a second round. Okay. We received a little over $500,000 for that round. And we're still waiting for approval for round one, which included some of that communications items. And that's what's still in the review process. And that's where some of the questions came back.
So, between round
one and two, if we get fully funded, it'll be about $830,000.
And that's – think about that, everybody. I want you to think about that for your school district, everybody. Hello? Hello? This is why we pay taxes. This is why we pay taxes, so the money can come back to us where we need it. All right? This is why. Princeton City Schools, $800,000 and more coming. This is important.
Yeah, for anyone that's in our district listening, they have been a great support. Before COVID, we actually went to levy for the first time in a very long time. And our school district and our community and our community passed the levy to support the schools, and we greatly appreciated that. And even on top of that, we are advocates for our community, so we're going to get every dollar that we can to make sure that we can stretch out that levy to last as long as possible and to make sure that our students are fully connected and getting the education that they need.
And I must say this, and congratulations to your city for doing that, for your towns, your school district for doing that. I remind everyone that every dollar you put into a school district pays itself back. And the value of your home and the value of your area depends on the quality of the schools. And ask any realtor, and they will tell you the first question people ask is, how are the schools? All right? It's the first question. Okay, so every dollar you put in is an investment in your home, in your property, in your community. And I'm glad Princeton City folks, that area that calls itself Princeton City School District, okay, understands that. Well, a third window is opening. Am I correct, Chris, for ECF?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Talk about it.
So
Third
window is now open. I don't have the details on the exact amount of money because it's actually just been announced this week, but we should know here soon. And so this one, they're time-based. So the first two rounds were through June 2022 of this year. There's a whole other story about the extension of that. But this round now is going to be from that June 22 period to December of 2023. So it will cover any of those connectivity needs that you can justify during that particular time period. So if you have, those additional access contracts or additional equipment that you need that has not been fulfilled that needs to be purchased or replaced within that time frame, you have access to apply for that third round.
And how's it going to be? How are you going to use it, or do you envision using it for your school district?
Well, we have some additional devices that are expiring, and again, because we have that 67% poverty rate, we have a lot of students that we are providing them their internet access, whether it's on the device that they have at home or whether it's the actual connectivity itself. So we're just going to continue to support that and potentially expand upon it.
And think how important that is. This is the age of the internet. I always go back, talk about the old TVA. They brought electricity to some of the states that didn't have it back in the 30s. And, we take radio and TV and now cable for granted. We take it all for granted. Okay, where would you be without electricity? Okay, and in the 1930s, that was what mattered. And these days, where would you be without internet connection and the devices to get on? Where would you be? How could you possibly get ahead? Okay, and you can't. Okay, that's the world of information these days, like electricity was, if I may, in the 1930s. What you're doing, okay, Chris, I got to say this, for the kids in your school district, we talk about equity and access. Okay, that's exactly what you're giving them by using these funds properly and getting every dollar you can, I might add. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's intentional because 10 years ago, we would buy a science book, hand it to a student, and we would trust that student to take that science book back and forth from school to home. The science book probably cost about $175. We also gave them a math book that they would carry back and forth from school to home. The math book probably cost another $125. So we've already been giving students hundreds of dollars worth of assets that we trusted them to carry back and forth. Well, today, our science books are digital. So if I don't provide the access for that student to take his, I'm doing air quotes here, science book home, then I've created a gap. You know, there was Horace Mann that said in 1848, education then beyond all other divides of human origin is the great equalizer of conditions of men, the balance wheel of the social machinery. So we are trying to create that great equalization. And so they have to have it. It was an option before, but it's a requirement now. So that's my job, is to make sure that the students have what they need to be successful, and I take that serious.
Wow. And I got to tell you something, that is one of the best analogies I have heard, because sometimes in school districts' minds, they were concerned about the kids doing harm or not returning or stealing or not giving, for those reasons, you know, not giving them the Chromebook or the computer or whatever, the tablet, whatever they were needing. All right. And the simple fact is, you're right. Okay, we were giving them textbooks for a year and saying, we're trusting you with this. All right? And that, yes, that gave an equity and access in the 1920 through 2000. That was equity and access. Every kid got a textbook. And I might add, some of them were fairly old. Okay, but we did give them the textbooks. All right? And that same morale has – moral, that's the word I want to use. That same thing has to go back. Okay, to what we're doing with computers. I love the way you said that. I'm not saying it right, but you did. Okay, you got to have trust in people and understand you're giving them the access they need. Chris, this is great, man. Okay, are you taking any days off this week, or is it all back at the office? What's going on?
I'll be in the office probably. I may take Friday off. I may give, because this is our end of spring break. So I may take a 3-day weekend, which actually I won't, because there's a conference I'm going to start over the weekend. But I love the work that I do. So, you know, I never feel like I'm really working. Yeah.
You're gonna treat yourself to some good Montgomery Inn ribs and think of me, because they are good, man. They are good.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but for those that are listening, take advantage of the ECF funds. Take advantage of the E-rate funds. And with a good consulting company, they'll make sure that you get the most that you can get, because the money is sitting there. This is what it is intended for.
Yeah, good point.
To educate
and
connect students. So put that money to good use. And I'll say this about the ECF, and this will be my last quote for today. Winston Churchill said it, never let a good crisis go to waste.
You're darn right. Okay. We got to get something good out of this stinking pandemic. Yep. We got to get something good out of it.
You know?
Chris, you're a good man. I love this conversation. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I thank you for the invitation.
Sir. Yeah, you're welcome here anytime. And if I may say so, whenever you get there, enjoy those ribs.
Will do.
Thanks, buddy. You take care. Be good, Chris.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. That, everybody, is Chris Lockhart, who's the Director of Technology for Princeton City Schools. That's the Princeton City School District, all right, which actually is a combination of various townships and little cities right near Cincinnati, Ohio. All right, and wow, you heard it all here. Please, I know it sounds like an ad. Fundsforlearning.com. Their website is tons of information, but just don't do it yourself. Okay, get every dollar. Chris said it best. The money's there. Get it for your kids. All right. We'll archive over at ace-ed.org. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Julie. I'm Larry Jacobs.